because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol with a special guest, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Good
really
to be with you guys.
It.
Yep.
How's it feel? Session done? Is that a good feeling?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of sneaks up on you because you're always, you know, working and adjusting to the bills. So when you finally get that last calendar, you know it's kind of a big deal because you recognize just about every bill that's on there because it's been in some form along the way. Some of them you thought wouldn't make it, and others you thought would be a slam dunk, and you're surprised, I think, at the end when the votes aren't there or the votes appear from nowhere. So it's part of that process, but it's good to have that wrapped
up. Let's talk about some of the major things that passed last session. On our list, of course, the GAB is no more, going to be replaced with elections and ethics.
Right.
New campaign finance code.
That's right.
And narrowing of John Doe. JR, what's on your list, Room?
Well, I guess what I wonder more is what are the things that didn't pass this session are on your list to come up early next session? I think you mentioned to us the other night before you guys finished up that sanctuary cities could be tweaked. The RAINS Act could be tweaked and come back. High capacity wells is a priority to come back next session. I mean, are those three things you think you'll address early on? Is the groundwork there to take right away, or do you need more work before you guys can reach consensus on those bills?
No, they are. I mean, all three of those items that you just mentioned are certainly bills that I think would fall into that category. I mean, the interesting thing is that you will have a different face of both the Republican caucus and certainly the minority party will probably look a little bit different as well. So you never want to jump to any conclusions that a bill is going to, you know, reappear in the same form and have just as much momentum. Things change during that period of time in which legislators are out there running for re-election. So, but I think, yeah, there are many bills that will reappear in some form or another.
But sanctuary cities, I want to ask you, was that a timing issue, do you think? Because it was March, and now we're talking election November, and it's kind of a sensitive topic, or is it there needs to be a real change to the bill to make people happy with it before it could come back in the Senate?
No, I think that is a good example of a bill that, because there was a real sensitivity towards, what was being done, and there were many, I think, individual legislators that really hadn't focused on it at all, thinking that it wasn't really going anywhere. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, I was shocked to see it on the Assembly's last calendar and had a discussion with the Speaker about, you know, what was kind of the logic of putting it there and moving it forward. And then, you know, law enforcement, I think if you called a lot of law enforcement agencies, they quite honestly didn't know exactly what the bill did or in what form, you know, would they try to utilize it moving forward. So, I mean, there was just a lot of big question marks, and when you get down to the last couple of days of session, it's difficult to get a bill through with many incumbents and in the Senate with, you know, half the Senate up for re-election. It's hard to convince those people that this is something that we need to take care of.
I'm going to ask about two other issues, Senator. Do you think the proposed ban on fetal tissue research can be repaired and passed next session, or from what you learned and your colleagues learned this session, it's going to be really hard to pass?
I think that's a good example of a piece of legislation in which Wisconsin was kind of breaking new ground. And as a result of that, the further we got into that issue, I think many legislators got nervous when they looked around and said, well, let's see what other states are doing on that issue and how can we tackle that bill. And quite honestly, many of us, including myself, we kind of were like, there aren't many states that are tackling this. I mean, the one that probably has done the most work is the state of Ohio. And there again, I think their bill is not in the same form that ours was. And there was just enough questions in and around some of the research and whether or not, the University of Wisconsin was going to be on board that it was very difficult to move. And although people weren't very much opposed publicly, behind closed doors, there was a lot of discussions about, can somebody please tell me what effect this will have on research? And it was very difficult to nail that down. So, but is that bill going to be back? I think absolutely it will be. Mm-hmm. But it'll be a question of kind of in what form. And are there other examples that will eventually emerge that bill can be put into a form that gets, you know, much more support than what it did.
Pretty emotional ending to that last Senate session on the issue of CBD oil. Mm-hmm. You guys seemed really close to a compromise, or am I reading it wrong?
It's still a class one narcotic that is not approved by the FDA.
Very true.
And when you start from that premise, there were a number of senators that found themselves in a position of, you know, I get it, I understand it, but I just cannot support it. And towards the end of session, you know, I was being approached by a number of senators that said, you know, kind of look the other way, let's pass the bill anyways. It you know, it sailed through the assembly. You know, I have two votes on the Senate Org Committee, both Senator Vukmir and Senator Lozick, who are not in support of the bill.
Okay.
And we got to the point where I was like, I have no idea how we're going to get the votes for a calendar through the Senate Org Committee with two of our senators that are most opposed and being vocal about it. Quite honestly, very upset if that bill would have been included on that final calendar. So I thought it was unfair on the last day of session to have the minority party pull a procedural move to try and get that to the floor and force some of our members to vote no. So, you know, we used another procedure to kind of make sure that that didn't happen. But, you know, 6 months from now, there'll be a lot of work on this bill. And we're also waiting to hear, you know, I'm not sure why Congress is off the hook on this. If anybody wants to change that Schedule 1, it's Congress. And, you know, there's confusion amongst the states. There's 21 states that have it. We know there's people that are mail ordering the CBD oil into Wisconsin. And, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to find a DA that I think would prosecute that. But still, I understand the families are very concerned that, you know, this should be something that should happen. And we'll see. Like I said, it'll be another legislature that'll consider this, and we'll see where the bill goes.
Just one more question before I turn it back to JR. Let's look forward to the 2017-2019 budget. Is your biggest question transportation funding with that next budget as a former co-chairman of finance, sir?
I mean, I think, you know, transportation is always going to be one of the big moving parts. But the first thing I would say is just overall the revenue and whether or not corporate sales and income tax are going to meet the projections. Right now, the word is that they are. And if that's the case, I think we've left ourselves in a good position to deal with the next state budget. I will say this about my own caucus. I was very... very proud of the idea that we were watching each and every bill that passed on that final calendar and knew exactly just how much general purpose revenue was being spent by those bills. Because not only I think we had kind of a internal goal of making sure that we didn't spend as much as the Assembly Republicans did on the last day, but also that we made sure coming into this next session that we put ourselves in the best position we possibly could, and I think we did that.
Just to follow up on transportation, do you think the next budget, the 2017-19, still will not include any increase in either the gas tax or the $75 that you and I pay to register our car?
I think it's going to be hard for the legislature to go where the governor won't.
Okay.
And if Governor Walker still is adamant that there's not going to be any type of revenue increase, I know I have members that disagree with that. I would disagree with the idea that we were unable to do even a vehicle registration fee change in this last budget. But the question is going to be, does that mean you're reducing projects again? Although I will say this, there's a whole segment of my caucus that still feels that DOT is not necessarily being as frugal as they possibly could be. And it's anecdotal, but every time you bring up another roundabout being built or another bypass being built in conjunction with a local municipality, I mean, those are the types of things that drive legislators nuts, because they're saying, you know, I got a road falling apart either within the city or a town road, and at the same time we're building this, you know, major four-lane expansion. So, you know, there's still going to be some criticism of DOT and the way that they're handling some of this stuff. And as long as that's in place, it's just one more reason why, you know, some legislators will say, listen, I'm not voting for a gas tax increase, and I'm not going to, you know, certainly keep exploring open road tolling until we get a handle on this.
And that plan for counties, local option, half-cent sales tax, that was DOA in your caucus, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, many of my members thought you're just shifting, you know, a public policy discussion off of the state and onto the local. So although it did have some support, I think more so in the assembly than it did in my caucus. I mean, there were a few people that had talked about it early. But once they saw kind of what it did and the mess it actually could create at the local level, okay, there was very little support for it.
I'm sorry, JR, I've been hogging it.
It's okay. The caveat the governor's offered to is no increase has been, if you can find an offsetting tax decrease somewhere else, he would be okay with a fee or tax increase in transportation. Considering A, Medicaid, talked about most of the new dollars, B, the emphasis on education funding, I keep hearing from Republicans and the governor himself.
Yeah.
Do you think there'll be enough money to either transfer money from the general fund to the transportation fund or offset a gas increase in the next budget? Or is that not an option in your mind?
I mean, what I would say is I think both within the Assembly Republican caucus and within my caucus, there's still an appetite to reduce taxes, to cut taxes. So I would never, say that linkage or relationship between cutting taxes and maybe in some form or fashion putting more transportation money on the table isn't going to emerge. But, as I sit here today, it's difficult to envision exactly what that would look like. But, I mean, the overall concept, I think, is probably something that will continue to be discussed because, I think because in the end you'll probably have some decisions like that to make.
You told us number of times that it's going to be a tough budget coming up in 2017-18. How do you define a tough budget? Is it going to be we have enough room to continue as is, or we have to cut to meet projections? We have to cut current spending levels or commitment levels to keep things balanced the next budget.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you can isolate certain parts of the budget and say, that there were some members that were uncomfortable with the reductions, and probably the one that's, the biggest and most discussed was the reductions to the UW system. Tight budget to me means that revenue's flat. And as a result of that, it not only makes it more difficult to cut taxes, but it also makes it more difficult, I think, for any legislator to say, okay, this is a slam dunk budget. It's going to be very easy. I was around for some of those budgets in the late 90s in which Governor Thompson was not only able to kind of move forward with an expansion of some very conservative programs, probably W-2 being the best example. But we just had more flexibility to do some of those public policy moves. When you're in a tight environment like we were in this last budget, it's hard to get through a number of these discussions when you know it's just going to be less revenue. Now, that doesn't mean that, like I said, these caucuses won't have an appetite for more tax cuts, because they do, and they will. And so we'll see kind of, where we end up in January.
You mentioned UWSS real quick.
Yeah.
Should the governor bother bringing back the authority for UW, or is that DOA if he brings it back in the next budget?
Yeah, I mean, it was, there was a cool reception, I think, kind of even within the caucuses this last time around. But I wouldn't say it would, certainly not be worth our while to have that discussion again. I think it's definitely something that many members thought was, worth our time.
I want to ask about one other issue that's out there for 17-19 cycle, Senator. The governor has indicated he would like to recommend that the state self-insure for health care. Mm-hmm. What's your initial response to that?
I've told the governor straight up when this discussion started that the one thing you certainly have to be very concerned about is how many jobs are going to be shed as a result of that move. I mean, the HMO industry wasn't built in Wisconsin overnight, and certainly it would be difficult to pull the rug out from underneath that industry and not have some type of direct effect. So, and you can tell, I think, not only because of the caucuses, but certainly within the Finance Committee, that people are going to proceed very cautiously because they don't want to see that industry kind of devastated. And, the savings has to be substantial. So I think there is support, but people are very concerned and very cautious about that move because of the job loss that it will have an effect on. And, specifically in Dane County, where many of those individuals live and work, you know, it could have an adverse effect, and I think that's why some legislators are concerned.
Did you have a follow up before we go to the elections?
No, I want to talk politics.
I want to talk politics.
Yeah.
The Democrats have made no secret. Their number one target is the open seat, Senator Gudeck's seat in the 18th, yeah. And then Senator Tiffany's, and then Senator Harsdorf, and then Senator Olson. What I've done is, well, I just find it interesting, the turnout by Democrats in 2010 when we elected a governor rose 60% in 2012 when we voted on a president.
Right.
So are you worried about any of those four senators, Senator?
Well, I mean, anytime a sitting senator stands for re-election, I mean, we're going to make sure that they have everything available to them to be able to demonstrate to their own constituency that we're doing the right thing and we're on the right track. And I think any of those incumbents that are up, which I'm very pleased to have, you know, that list of incumbents that are coming back in place, because I think it not only guarantees that the Republicans maintain control in the state Senate, but I think it gives us the flexibility and the ability to not only keep an open seat like the 18th, which we've had for many, many years, but also to make a run at a couple of incumbents on the other side of the aisle. So I feel really good about where we're at in this election cycle, and I think if there's any question mark, it's going to be the same question mark for the Democrats as well as the Republicans. It's going to be this presidential race and what effect it has down ticket. I certainly think it will have an effect on some of those races, both in Congress, in the House of Representatives, I should say, and in the U.S. Senate. But what that effect is, as we sit here today, I have no idea. It's so volatile and it's so all over the place. It's very difficult to measure.
Go for it, Chair.
Does Donald Trump, as your nominee, keep you awake at night in terms of Senate races this fall?
It cuts both ways for me. I think I'm seeing something that, you know, we hadn't seen before, and it's the amount of people that are turning out for some of these elections. And I'm expecting in Wisconsin on April 5th, you're going to have the same thing. You're going to have a huge turnout. And that flies in the face of what would happen in Wisconsin typically within that presidential year. Mm. So, on the upside, because of all the interest in the Republican presidential primary, turnout might be just the medicine that the Republicans need in this cycle, is that people are ginned up, excited, and they'll show up at the polls. What effect it'll be depending on who the nominee is, pretty difficult to say. But, if I'm a Democrat, I'm a little concerned that their turnout is down in some of these states. And as a result of that, to me, it looks like Clinton is eventually going to be the nominee on that side. And if that's the case, are those people going to be excited about going out and voting for Hillary, the same way our people are going to be to support whomever emerges from that convention in Cleveland this summer?
Have you made a decision? Who do you support, Senator?
I haven't. I early on, I had a number of discussions with Jeb Bush, been big supporter of the Bush family and thought a lot of that family, and actually met with Jeb in Milwaukee when the presidential debate was held there. But you could see, like most people could see, he just wasn't gaining any traction. So since then, I've had a couple of conversations and people have reached out to me, but I have not, endorsed anybody. Not that I think Scott Fitzgerald's endorsement in the presidential is going to swing the entire race either way. But certainly I've been listening and watching with fascination, I think, like many other people that are not only elected officials, but political junkies too.
Before we actually turn to the number of presidential candidates that are coming to Wisconsin, a final question. Are you concerned that Governor Walker's approval rating seems stuck at 38%? Does that bother you as a party leader?
I guess, early on, I thought to myself, when the governor announced he was jumping into the presidential race, I mean, everyone knows that that's a direct effect on any governor that does that. And certainly you're seeing that with some of the other governors that ran, that their numbers kind of drop dramatically. So I think it's as a result of that. People wonder if that's going to have a direct effect on legislative races. I think if the governor was up for re-election right now, it might. But no, I don't think it will. And I think, if there's anything that kind of is not necessarily related to coattails, it's probably the idea that when you're in the Assembly or when you're in the state Senate, I mean, you run for re-election on your own merits. It's a much different connection and a much tighter connection you have with your constituents than they do at even the congressional level.
Okay. So. I want to ask you about the 18th. Dan Phan, Fond du Lac County GOP Chair, Mark Elliott from Oshkosh. I've always been told that in that district, if you can find a Republican candidate who's from Oshkosh, who's well known there, you can cut in the Dem advantage from that city and make it an easier path to win. Does either candidate give you a better shot to keep that seat come November? And will you guys play in that primary at all?
Yeah, I know that is the kind of the conventional wisdom is that, you know, if you're from Winnebago County, you might have somewhat of an advantage. But, you know, I've worked and recruited candidates that have come out of Fond du Lac and out of Fond du Lac County, and we've had success there. Mm-hmm. Tight races, very tight races. And we'll see. I mean, I've kind of made it a policy to work with any candidate that gets in to a Republican primary, but not necessarily throw, you know, kind of the full weight of the committee to elect Republican Senate behind him. But, you know, both gentlemen are gearing up, working hard, organized, doing the things that I would expect a candidate to do. So I think no matter who emerges from that, they'll be in a very good position to win that general election.
Okay. Now let's talk about the president. It's the week, JR, that the presidential candidates have found Wisconsin. And stay a part of the conversation. So Now we have Chelsea here, Chelsea's Milwaukee, Waukesha, Madison.
Cruz was in Pewaukee last night with Charlie Sykes' show. Kasich was in Wauwatosa yesterday.
Right.
Trump is coming on Tuesday.
Right.
Cruz is in Janesville this afternoon at 5 o'clock. So the circus has come to town. We are officially the epicenter, if you will, of the presidential election.
Well, what do you think of the alliance between former Governor Thompson trying to really help Kasich and help have him do well in Wisconsin? Do you think it'll work? And then I'll ask you.
What's fascinating is you kind of see the old guard in the Republican Party of Wisconsin getting behind Kasich. Tommy Thompson's endorsed him.
Scott McCallum.
Jack Voigt. Scott Klug, former congressman from the Madison area. So it seems like he's kind of more the establishment guy, which reflects that nationally, the establishment doesn't really like Ted Cruz. I mean, it's fascinating that 3 months ago, when I asked Republicans about that race, they would tell you that Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are both not appealing candidates. But now Cruz has become this, like, great alternative because he's not Donald Trump.
And he's working Wisconsin hard.
Very much so. And then you have talk radio in Milwaukee, who has basically gone all in on Ted Cruz because they do not like Donald Trump.
That's right.
They're part of the anybody but Trump crowd. And so you're going to see a very interesting dynamic of how much can those guys drive turnout in the southeastern Wisconsin get behind Cruz, because if you look at the polling that Charles Franklin of the Marquette, Donald Trump's going to be popular in northern and western Wisconsin, basically outside the wow counties, if you will, in southeastern Wisconsin. So that's where talk radio is, down here. But out here is more Trump territory. And remember, how we do delegates in Wisconsin is different. So you have 18 to 42 done by winner takes all, plurality of the vote, statewide, you get those 18 delegates. But then it's three per congressional district. So you could see Trump doing well, like in the second, the third in western Wisconsin, the seventh and eighth in north, but then a Cruz doing really well in the first, in the fourth, in the fifth and sixth. It could be a split decision out of Wisconsin, depending on how things go in those districts.
Senator, Governor Walker said that Governor Kasich cannot be the nominee. Do you agree with that?
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, it's becoming more difficult to see what the path is for him when you look, you know, at the states that are still left there. I think the one thing that's different is, and I've been experiencing this back home in the district, is there is definitely this segment that are excited about Trump. Mm-hmm. That if this thing goes all the way to Cleveland and suddenly he does not become the nominee, you just lose a ton of turnout. So, I mean, I get it. The establishment is kind of pushing for either Cruz or Kasich. But at the end of the day, the fallout is still going to be, you know, who's going to show up if Trump does not become the nominee. So it's a tough spot to be in right now.
You said you met with Jeb Bush, so that indicates he was your first choice. What do you think of Senator Cruz? Assets and liabilities, sir?
Obviously very competent in the way that he understands the public policy issues and can articulate kind of the message. But there's also, you know, like I said, a group of constituents out there that somehow just don't find him appealing, and for a number of different reasons. So as a result of that, I think it puts you in a position again of, you know, Wisconsin, it's hard for me to believe that Wisconsin is going to be the deciding state in this, like it's being characterized by some of the pundits. But You know, if that vote is split, and even those congressional seats are split, you know, once again, who wins in that scenario? Donald Trump.
Can you see any scenario under which the nominee is Paul Ryan?
Well, I've heard the speaker say he will not be.
I understand, but he also said, I will not be speaker, and now he's speaker.
Yeah, I mean, from a political junkie perspective, I mean, a Cleveland convention without a nominee would be fascinating, but I just don't know if it's a good thing for the Republican Party. And, you know, it's hard for me to imagine somebody that is not running for president would suddenly become the nominee. I don't know if that would be acceptable. I think there's a segment of the people that think that this is a democracy, that this isn't about a party selecting their candidate. It's about somebody winning at the polls, which is not the case. Mm. When you've got some states being decided by caucus and others being decided by, you know, an open vote or a closed vote, however you want to describe that.
Final question on presidential, Jared?
Yeah.
Well, the governor this morning was in Madison, signed a bill, and he raised the open convention question and said, he thought if it is open that there might be the person who actually becomes the nominee would not be somebody in the race right now, which would be fascinating to see that happen. And what he's talking about, both parties have a risk in this election of being shredded. If the Democrats, if Bernie Sanders were doing better against Hillary Clinton and he was close to her but lost because of superdelegates, you would see that party be ripped apart at the convention because the Sanders folks would say, look, you stole it from us. We've tied her or whatever,
right,
but your superdelegates, the establishment took it away. Likewise, these Trump folks, if you go to a convention and he's at, let's say, 1,100 delegates, mm-hmm, 137 short of the needed, and they pick Cruz or bring back Rubio or bring back whoever, Scott Walker, Mitt Romney, go on the list. If they bring that person back as a nominee, that party could be imploded. It could implode right there in Cleveland. I mean, that's right, the risk when you ignore what's happening. But the establishment knows Trump is a liability in a lot of places at the top of the ticket. So what do you do?
Well, final topic, or final question before we go to our last topic. You want to predict who finishes first in the GOP primary April 5th? Trump, Cruz, Kasich, or another lineup, sir?
Yeah, I mean, the reason it's difficult to do that in Wisconsin, I think, is because of the turnout that's generated in the counties in and around Milwaukee. You know, in some presidentials, I mean, Waukesha County had the largest GOP turnout of any county in the entire nation, let alone Wisconsin. And I think with the amount of time and effort that talk radio has spent on this topic, you're going to see long lines on April 5th in and around Waukesha, Washington, and as far as that goes, Dodge, Jefferson counties.
And you're not ready to say whose lever you're going to pull?
No, I don't. Okay. I don't. Yeah, I'm not ready to say that today.
I understand. Yeah. Okay, final subject. We have two leaders retiring. Senate President Mary Lozick is leaving. She started in the State Assembly in '93. First woman Senate President. We're asking why she's just became president. Has she told you?
Yeah, kind of a mix of certain things. I think some going on in her personal life, as well as kind of feeling like she had accomplished just about everything she wanted to accomplish in the state senate. So I mentioned to a couple people about a month ago that I think she was trying to make that decision and kind of work through that. So, but you know, she did a fabulous job as the president. And I think some people early on were like, boy, I wonder if Mary's up to that task. But she handled herself and her demeanor in the chair was really great. And I had many Democrats approach me, even prior to her announcing her retirement, that said, wow, Mary's doing a fantastic job up in the chair, and we really appreciate that. And, you know, taking on the historic perspective of being the first female to serve in that position, she really did a great job.
And she got 63% of the vote 4 years ago, so that's a strong RC.
Yeah, strong constituent service. She's always been known for that. You know, always crossing the T, dotting the I's when it came to constituent work.
Right, and then the other retirement announcement is Representative Andy Jorgensen, who's been the Democratic Caucus Chair, and he will run for Rock County Register of Deeds. He's one of your representatives. Has he been a member of the loyal opposition?
Actually, he's not in my Senate seat anymore.
Oh,
but he was
that,
for years.
I apologize.
He was
then.
For years.
He was.
But
okay.
I have no idea what Andy's doing.
Running for Register of Deeds,
right?
He's closer
why,
to home with three kids.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought he was in a leadership track in the assembly, and kind of to jump out of that and run for Register of Deeds in Rock County makes no sense to me. But you know, more power to him.
It's his career.
And do
any
what he PSs wants.
On these?
Interesting, you know, with Lozick's seat, that Dave Craig had an announcement put together with the endorsement of both other assemblymen in that district within hours.
Skronsky and
Blazek's announcement.
Yeah.
Makes you think he's been thinking about this for a little while. Other thing is, I can't remember the track record of sitting assembly members who are Republicans running for a Senate seat, but they're almost undefeated, I think, in the last three or four decades in Wisconsin. So
right.
Dave Craig has an inside track to that seat, barring something interesting happening. You know, you're always watching this environment for the outsider coming in, especially somebody in the private sector who has significant personal resources. But barring that, most Republican primaries, especially in that neck of the woods, are about who's the most conservative. You can't get to the right of Dave Craig. It's very, very hard. So you think he has an inside track to win that one.
Okay.
But Andy's seat, it's solid Democratic seat, not like a slam dunk no matter what kind of seat, but the Dems should be favored. Remember, for Andy, he's in a minority right now with 36 seats. That's not climbing out of that minority anytime soon. So there may be a long-term view of it's not getting any different. The view's not going to change in the Assembly anytime soon.
Tough to be in the minority. There's no stock picks this week, JR, but we're looking at the last final week in the Supreme Court campaign. So give us a quick update of or a preview, anything?
A couple things on the air. Wisconsin Lines for Reform's third ad going up today, hitting Kloppenburg again, the soft on crime
right.
message. The Republican State Leadership Committee has a judicial wing. It is going up on the radio today against Kloppenburg as well. Interesting report earlier this week that the Greater Wisconsin Committee is going up on TV starting Monday.
I saw that in your report.
To go, we assume going after Bradley. Now, the theory I've been hearing is that, one, because the presidential campaigns are in town, if you're going to break through message-wise, you should be on the air now, because that last week is going to be a jumbled mess. The other thought I've heard is, this is spring break for Madison, a lot of districts that people are not really paying attention. Spring voters are late deciding voters. You're better off to try and burn in a heavy message the last week and try and catch them because they're late deciding voters. So those are two theories. We'll see which one plays out better come April 5th. But what's interesting is the still overreaching theme I hear from people is what happens in the presidential race. Because if Bernie Sanders makes Wisconsin not a last stand, but a chance to change the conversation, if you will, you can see him doing really well here, especially in 08 with Clinton Obama, where Obama won the state going away. This could be a great momentum builder for Sanders. On the Republican side, you can see the outside forces saying, this is our chance to stop the Trump momentum. So you're going to see him go all in on Cruz to help him out. So who is more motivated on which side to come out? And if you are a Sanders voter, you're going to be a Kloppenburg voter. The question is, if you're a Trump voter, for example, who are you backing? Because Trump voters seem to be less establishment, more anti who's in power kind of thing. Well, Bradley was appointed three times by Governor Walker. We know that. She's kind of the establishment pick. Where will those folks go? That's a huge question that could have more impact on this race than anything else.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I have one last question for you, Senator. If you alluded to a heavy turnout on April 5th,
mm-hmm.
does that more likely to help Justice Bradley or Judge Kloppenburg, do you think?
I think Bradley. I think the problem that they're going to have is that on the Democrat side, mm-hmm. that the Sanders thing, they're still relying on very young voters to turn out. And I doubt very much that the college kids are going to show up on April 5th. So my understanding would be I think the Republicans benefit from the presidential.
Okay, we're out of time. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And I want to thank Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald for joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.